Folks, Field of Greens is the healthiest thing I do every day, and I want you on this journey with me. Why? It's literally one scoop a day. It tastes great. I love the fruit flavors particularly, and it's completely improved my life and my health. This is nutrition the way nature intended. When I began taking a hard look at why I wasn't feeling good and why I felt unhealthy, why I was gaining weight, why I was losing energy, it wasn't just because I had hit my 50s. No, it was because I wasn't getting the right amount of fruit and vegetables in my diet. And listen, I'm just too busy to go to the store, clean up the vegetables, cook vegetable dinners, and make sure I hit the fruit. A Field of Greens stepped in. One scoop of powder in my drink or on my eggs in the morning, and boom, I was off and feeling better. And suddenly, I was losing weight. I was sleeping better. My metabolism went up. My blood sugar went down. My cholesterol went down, and my weight went down. And my doctor said, hey, whatever you're doing, keep it doing. You know what that is? It's Field of Greens. That's what I've been doing. Field of Greens is radically different. Each organic fruit and vegetable was medically chosen to support heart and vital organ health. I trust Field of Greens to keep me healthy. I promise you, you're going to love this product. But if for any reason you don't, they'll give you 100% money back guarantee. Now, you're going to get 15% off your first order, plus free rush shipping because of the incredible partnership we have here at Just the News with Brick House Nutrition, and of course, Field of Greens. All you got to do to take advantage of this offer, visit fieldofgreens.com and use the promo code JustNews. That's promo code JustNews at fieldofgreens.com. Don't wait. Go to fieldofgreens.com today. Use the promo code JustNews for 15% off. Hello, America. Happy Thursday. Big show for you today. We're going to take most of the show today and take you inside Ukraine. A first-hand account. I'm very excited about this, actually. From someone who's been living in Ukraine, who supports freedom, supports American-style freedom in Ukraine, is trying to create a free market enterprise and solution, both before the war, before Russia grossly attacked Ukraine, during the war, and of course, she already has an eye on how she's going to rebuild her country when Ukraine kicks Russia's butt, like she certainly hopes. We've got a great guest today, Natalia Milnik. She is a Ukrainian-born communications director of the Bendukidze Free Market Center in Kiev, Ukraine. She's a lifelong Ukrainian, saw the fall of the wall, saw the blossoming of democracy in Ukraine, saw the first invasion of Russia in 2014 and the second invasion of Russia in 2022, because both of those on the watch of Joe Biden. She's going to join us alongside of Lawson Bader, my good friend, president and CEO of the Donors Trust. If you want to donate and make a difference in Ukraine, Donors Trust does some really great vetting and arranging. What they do is they get the governments and the big bureaucratic NGOs out of the way, and they get people to people so that 100% of your money gets the impact that you want. Your values, your money, your impact are all aligned in Ukraine. Lawson and his team at Donors Trust are doing some amazing work. We're going to learn about that. We're going to have a long, deep conversation. This is something we very seldom get a chance to talk to people who've been through this war firsthand, know the needs of the Ukrainian people. You know, even things like viper serum that the soldiers, now that they're in the Ukrainian force, are getting bit by poisonous vipers. And that's something Ukraine never stockpiled before. Those are the sort of daily needs that you're donating money. If you were to enlist with Donors Trust and get read up and read in, you can make a difference. And then we're going to take a detour and take a great interview we had on our TV show last night, put it into the podcast here. Austin Scott, the great congressman from Georgia, good friend of our shows, he's going to talk a little bit about how far off the January 6th committee has been in its allegations. There to defend, of course, Congressman Barry Loudermilk, who's been falsely accused. The video debunked it. Our work here at Just the News debunked that. And we're going to have a great conversation with Austin Scott, who is really just a straight shooter, former military man, current congressman from the great state of Georgia. Great interview to round out the podcast today. Now, before we get to those interviews, I don't want to take a lot of time because Natalia is a star. You're going to want to hear from her firsthand. You're going to want to hear from Lawson. You might even be motivated to do something to help the great people of Ukraine. But before we get there, I want to adjust for a second. I keep working on the Capitol security issues, what really happened on January 6th, not what the January 6th committee wants the political argument to be, but the actual facts. I did this 21 years ago when I was the lead investigative reporter for the Associated Press, and I unwound what really happened after 9/11, that horrible attack where we lost nearly 3,000 Americans in the hijacked planes and the attacks on the World Trade Center and Pentagon, and of course the plane that fell into Pennsylvania or was flown into the ground by the terrorists in Pennsylvania. But I say this because early on, the Bush administration, Condi Rice and other people, stood at the podium and said, we were sucker punched. And that didn't make sense to me. Like, wait a second, the CIA, the NSA, the FBI, they had no inkling this was coming. And I did 2 years of reporting, a lot of it won awards. But its goal was to show that the American government knew almost every aspect of the plot. They knew almost every aspect of the plot. That's what's so amazing about it. And they failed to connect the dots. They failed to work with each other. The bureaucratic lapses. Much of my reporting became the fodder for what the 9/11 Commission ultimately found as factual and also found to fix, that we could actually fix this. Now, the January 6th committee, Benny Thompson and Liz Cheney, could actually do this for the American people, because the truth of the matter is the storyline that the Capitol Police and the Capitol and the Capitol security apparatus under Nancy Pelosi didn't see this coming is now demonstrably false. It didn't make sense to me, just like 9/11 original stories didn't make sense. We've dug in for 2 or 3 weeks, nonstop reporting with Capitol Police on the front lines, and we've proven just everything. But this morning's story may be the most important story to date that I've written. I have put into the public domain the actual documents. You don't have to take my word on this. I'm not so arrogant to think you should believe my story just because I tell you to believe it. I'll leave that arrogance for the New York Times and CNN, have misled you many times. We post our documents. We posted these documents on December 21st, 2020, 2.5 weeks before the $600 million Capitol Police force was overrun by a ragtag gang of protesters at the Capitol. The Capitol Police, at the highest levels, at the entry level of its intelligence division, received dual warnings, one from Homeland Security, federal U.S. agency, U.S. Homeland Security Department, and another from an intelligence agent working for the Metropolitan Police Department in the Metropolitan DC government. They provided 8 to 10 pages of very specific warnings that the bad guys who would eventually show up from Oath Keepers and Proud Boys and other extremist radical groups that they had been planning since mid-December, let that sink in for a second, mid-December, to attack the Capitol, that they were talking about bringing guns and secreting them under their coats, that they were talking about burning down the Supreme Court, that they had maps and were talking about targeting tunnels underneath the Capitol to trap members of Congress and keep them from being able to attend the vote that was supposed to occur that day to certify the election. At every arm, at every leg of this, there were specific warnings. The level of specificity, the level of vitriol, the level of emotion that made clear that before January 6th, before Christmas 2020, the Capitol Police had the warnings, the places that they knew were being looked at, tunnels, Capitol routes. They knew that people were talking of storming the Capitol, of blocking the vote, of attacking members of Congress. There was a specific threat against Nancy Pelosi, a specific threat about targeting the tunnels, lots of talk about carrying guns, and an incredible declaration by someone in the Proud Boys, I believe it was, or another one of the extreme groups. There was an effort to wage a bloody war. In other words, the Capitol Police were put on notice 2.5 weeks early that violence was likely to happen on a large scale. That intelligence never made it into any of the intel reports that go to the commanders, the frontline police officers, the riot teams, the civil disturbance units, as we call them. This is a epic failure. Now, the failures of 9/11 cost a lot more lives, right? 3,000 lives, or nearly 3,000 lives were lost on 9/11. There were no people except one killed on the day of the Capitol, Ashley Babbitt, shot by a Capitol police officer. But the parallels of the intelligence failures, the security failures, the failure to connect the dots, the failure to communicate, the failure of bureaucrats to do their job are almost identical. And the truth of the matter is this evidence, a lot of members of Congress now telling me what I put out there in the public, is proof that the Capitol Police could have likely prevented the worst of January 6th from happening. Could have likely prevented it. They had it 2.5 weeks early. They dropped the ball. They didn't even distribute the intel to their police chief or to the frontline commanders, riot units, frontline police officers, so that most of the police walking in to their job on January 6th in the Capitol thought it's going to be just another day, another type of MAGA event, when in fact, for 2.5 weeks before that, their leadership, at least some in their leadership, knew there were going to be attacks. That is unforgivable. That is a failure of leadership. That is documented on Just the News. Go to my story tonight, Bloody War. The Capitol Police got more than 2 weeks' notice of that violence might occur on January 6th memo show. Go download the memos, particularly the 8-page technical intelligence bulletin that came in from Homeland Security. It is detailed. If you read that and think, oh, well, I don't think anything's going to happen on January 6th, I don't know what you read. But that's certainly how a lot of the police leadership did. This is a failure that could have been prevented. We have that, and I think we'll talk a little bit about that with Austin Scott in the second half of the podcast. All right, let's take a quick commercial break. When we come back, Natalia Milnick from Ukraine, Lawson Bader from Donors Trust, they're going to kick us off. We're going to learn about what's going on in Ukraine, how you can make a difference. And then we're going to go to the great congressman from the state of Georgia, Austin Scott, to talk about the January 6th story that you won't see at the hearings today, tomorrow, yesterday. The Democrats don't want to have a conversation about security and security prevention. That's bad for the American people. We'll show you why in the second interview. We'll be right back after this commercial break from our great partners, advertisers, and sponsors. Hey folks, as we approach another critical election, a wave of concern washes over America. Recent studies reveal that an astonishing 56% of our fellow citizens report feelings of anxiety or dread about the upcoming presidential election. That's why I stand with AMAC. AMAC is more than a senior discount organization. During these challenging times, they fight for common sense and hope that our nation returns to traditional American values. Visit amac.us/justnews today to seize an exclusive election year special, a 4-year AMAC membership for just $30. That's right, you heard me right, 4 years for $30. As an AMAC member, you're not only enjoying money-saving benefits, but also the AMAC magazine, free Social Security and Medicare advice, a trusted voice in Washington, and a community of like-minded patriots who love this great nation. Take advantage of this election year special, 4 years for $30, and be part of the solution over the next 4 years. By becoming an AMAC member, you're strengthening a movement dedicated to preserving the principles we hold dear in this great country. Join now at amac.us/justnews. That's amac.us/justnews. Folks, if you owe back taxes, fair warning, you're not going to like this. The IRS is mailing millions of pay-up letters. Millions, I say. Then it's up to the 20,000 new IRS enforcement agents to find you. Why the IRS targets you and not millionaires? Well, because millionaires have tax lawyers. You don't. You'll pay up. Plus interest and penalties. You need Tax Network USA, and you need them now. Tax Network USA has brilliant war room strategies to solve your IRS problems quickly and in your favor. Like a preferred direct line to the IRS, they know which agents to deal with and who to avoid. It's not all bad news for you because Tax Network USA learned of a special limited time IRS offer. They're willing to waive $1 billion in penalties if you qualify. So schedule your free confidential consultation to see if you qualify for this limited time IRS penalty canceling offer. To do so, call 1-800-245-6000. That's 1-800-245-6000 or visit tnusa.com/justnews. That's tnusa.com/justnews. All right, folks, welcome back from the commercial break. Excited to have this next conversation. All of us in America are worried about what's happening in Ukraine. We want to help. That's our natural nature in America, to be generous and to be engaged in the places of the world where there are grave problems going on. But it isn't easy to always make the right choice. And so we're going to give you a little help today. We have two amazing guests joining us. First up, Lawson Bader. He's the president and CEO of Donors Trust, one of the most important charitable organizations in America. They help align your charitable donations with your values. That's a very important thing. And then Natalia Melnick, she's the communications director, and I'm going to see if I can say this right, the Bendikudze Free Market Center. Did I get that right, Natalia?
That's close enough.
Okay, well, we'll get you to get it right for us. Lawson and Natalia, welcome to the show.
Glad to be here.
That's great.
Thank you for having us.
Natalia, I can't wait to get your story because you grew up in Ukraine. You've been living there. I know you're in America for a few days, but I want to really get your first person account. But before we do that, I want to start with Lawson because I've seen Donors Trust in action for years, and they are so important in taking people who really want to make a difference with money, make sure that we align it. There's a lot of fundraising going on out there. A lot of people saying they want to help in Ukraine. How does someone who wants to step into that void and say, I want to help, I want to make a difference, make a good choice and not be giving money away to something that might actually not reach the great people of Ukraine?
Thanks, John. No, it's a good question. Appreciate the shout out. The first question people need to answer is, you know, what is their motivation? What's their reason for doing this? If it's the purely sort of humanitarian, the kind of responses we see when there's a natural disaster, or in this case in Ukraine, quite an unnatural disaster, the food, the shelter, the housing, and then oftentimes is done in the big block organizations, your Organization of American States and a quasi-governmental one, your American Red Cross, International Red Cross, these kinds of things. But the real question is, but how do you be strategic? How do you align your values where you're looking at what's happening geopolitically and say, look, this is just not right. Yes, I want to provide shelter, but how can I actually be helpful to the Ukrainian people who are trying to defend their country, defend their homes? So if you sort of come to that second question, that's where we and a lot of other organizations come in. So there are things like the Atlas Network has a Ukrainian Freedom Fund. We have our own donors who are giving us instructions on how to find the places where it's essentially a peer-to-peer. It's money going to purchase things that are then being driven, in some cases, literally to another center in Poland, then going to the border and then connecting with Natalia and her network, who are then also sending messages back about this is what we actually need. Food and shelter is great. What we're missing are a certain kind of a tourniquet that will only work in this condition. So we then have people both in the United States, outside the United States, who have the ability to buy these things, put them into the network, and then it's then distributed. And we at Donors Trust and others are able to then provide the funds for the purchasing of those things. And then we work with the individuals who are actually doing the delivery. And there's no government-to-government involvement at all. It's peer-to-peer, and that's 100% guarantee that it's going to actually get to the people in need.
Yeah, that's so important. I mean, a lot of times people give, and even if the charity you're giving to has good intentions, being able to logistically deliver it, particularly in a war zone, that can be a complication, and a lot of money can get wasted that way. That's why
exactly.
Yeah, what you're doing, Lawson, at Donors Trust is so, so important. Natalia, you grew up in Ukraine. You live there now. Tell the American people what it's been like since the Russian assault on your country.
Well, yes, I'm a very proud Ukrainian, especially these days. And I want to remind everyone that for us, the invasion started in 2014,
right,
back when Russia invaded Crimea and then eastern Ukraine. So right now, basically, we are in the fourth month of an eight-year-old war. But definitely, it feels different right now, because even back then in 2014 and before this latest invasion, it sometimes felt that the war was kind of localized and far away. But now it's all over the place, right? Because in February 24th, places in western Ukraine got bombed, which were supposed to be a safe haven,
right,
for Ukrainians to run to. To, you know, grab their things and go there to remove themselves from immediate danger. And then that day we saw that, well, there isn't a place like that anymore. So right now in Ukraine, you won't find a region that hasn't been bombed at least once. So in many cases, it just happens, you know, for more psychological pressure. And like, we are already dealing with a lot of difficult things. People are losing homes, and more than 14 million Ukrainians are displaced. And about 7 million Ukrainians had to leave the country. Our economy is in shambles, and each day we are getting, you know, more and more news about someone we know or a friend of friends who got killed or injured. So all of us have been dealing with this horrible guilt, right? The ones who survived, the ones who still have a home, or the ones who are safe somewhere abroad. And the way for us to deal with this guilt is to try to be useful in some way.
Sure.
And this is what has been driving a lot this humanitarian effort that Ukrainians are participating in, because this is basic grassroots efforts that we are talking about. And all of us are just trying to find a niche where they can be the most helpful, right? Not trying to overtake major foundations that are, you know, doing the big picture stuff. But since we are on the ground, we are very well placed to receive basically lists of urgent needs that need to be covered as soon as possible. And we deal with humanitarian and medical aid. And we are using the network at our disposal as part of Atlas Network,
sure,
community of organizations all over the world to get access to things that it's impossible to get in Ukraine and even in neighboring countries, because basically we bought whatever was available. And then we find ourselves in a situation in which we have antibiotics shortages or insulin shortages. And these are the life-saving things that you need on a regular basis. And we're trying to make sure that Ukrainians who are still in Ukraine are getting taken care of medically, and also working with tactical medical aid to make sure that we can save as many lives as possible, you know, in hotspots, in most dangerous areas, be it civilian lives or the lives of our servicemen and servicewomen.
Yeah, that's such an important mission. Can you give us a little brief mission, an overview of the Bendikidze Free Market Center? It obviously had one mission before the war started. I assume that's been transformed as you've been talking about. Give us a little bit about its mission and what it does and what you do every day.
So my organization was founded back in 2015, and the goal was to unleash Ukraine's economic potential. So we were working on our basically day job was doing a policy analysis, policy recommendations, economic research, and economic education, because we see the need for increasing levels of economic literacy in the country. But all of that had to be on pause right after the invasion. Because first of all, we were in survival mode, and then when everyone was safe and settled, we turned to humanitarian efforts with the help of our community and network. And now we are starting to resume our day jobs because we do believe that we should be getting ready for what comes next, you know, after we win the war. After we have to actually get down to rebuilding the country and making sure that we don't go back to the way Ukraine was pre-war, that we built something much better, more prosperous, more successful, with more economic freedom, because this is the direct way to a higher level of security in the country, because we will be a lot better positioned to defend ourselves in the future, because unfortunately we cannot just uproot Russia and move it somewhere else, or
yes,
all the way in space, right?
Yep.
So we are stuck with this neighbor to the north. And historically, this is not the first time we've been having issues with Russia. So we just need to make sure that when next time happens, we will be a lot better prepared, and we won't have to be begging for help, for guns, for means for protecting ourselves, but we will be able to take care of the problem on our own.
Yeah, that is.
And so that's why we are trying to organize a coalition of pro-market organizations in the country, so that we join forces and promote this platform for making Ukraine prosperous and successful and influencing the roadmap, governmental roadmap for rebuilding the country when the time comes for that to happen.
That is such an important thing and so much foresight. Lawson, you have this extraordinary Atlas network that you've plugged into the Ukraine effort. You also have an amazing page, Ways to Help Ukraine, that I've looked at often. Talk a little bit about how, even in the middle of a war, the opportunity to grow a free market mentality in a country that maybe didn't have it during the Soviet era is still there, even as you're trying to help on the humanitarian front.
Sure. It's, you know, I was fortunate as a child, as an adult, young adult, to spend time in what was the Soviet Union and behind the Iron Curtain in the late 70s and 80s, which certainly shapes one pretty permanently.
I bet it does.
And so this has been sort of a personal thing for many years. But the reality is that, you know, it's not just that we all saw what happened sort of when the wall collapsed and collapsed the Soviet Union. There was this thought of, oh, of course, markets always work because that's what happens. And you go in and why wouldn't you do otherwise? And the realization is that this is a, you know, generational in terms of how we understand the ideas of free exchange and sort of that classical liberal perspective. And I think the West sort of overdid it or made some assumptions. And now we're sort of almost revisiting 1983 all over again. And that's been a wake up call. But the nice thing is in those 30, 40 years since this all happened, places like the Atlas Network, and there are 500 organizations around the world that are committed to the ideas of sort of classic liberal, you know, in the international sense, not in just the U.S. sense,
right,
that are working very directly on, it's one thing to defend a country. It's one thing to be active in a time of crisis. It's how do you actually have the institutional change? How do you develop the ability for a fourth grader to understand basic economic concepts that will one day make that fourth grader a more successful entrepreneur when he or she is 15, let alone a college graduate now working. And that's a multi-generational effort. The nice thing, even though it's a tragic thing, is you see what's happening in Ukraine, and the Lithuanians and the Estonians and the Latvians are looking over their shoulder, realizing, wait a minute, you know, we've been here before. And there's a generation who doesn't understand what that world was like. And I think that's the opportunity, is with the young people. I think what Russia has just done is allow the former Eastern republics to look at their 19-year-olds who didn't know any better and to think, guess what, this can happen again. And that's focusing significantly the opportunity. And when you're given an opportunity, you take it. And so it's not just the way of getting funds in. It's the ability to say, okay, when we win, when we are successful, what is a classical liberal approach to democratization and sort of a federal perspective mean? And what is wealth creation? How do you get rid of the obstacles to human flourishing that can be sometimes unintentional? But when you have human flourishing, it's not about teaching the man to fish. It's about teaching the village how to actually generate an entire fish processing plant that then benefits the entire region. And that's, I think, the opportunity that we have with the situation.
Yeah, the opportunity to create sustainable free market enterprise in that region of the world is such a great thing. And I know it's one of the many things that Donors Trust is helping to persist and get going. I wanted to ask a little bit about what it does in the donor world when you see someone like a President Zelensky, the resilience that he exudes on behalf of the extraordinary Ukrainian people. He's the perfect representative of Ukrainians. They are so resilient. I've known so many great Ukrainians going back to the 80s. How does that affect donors when they see someone in the face of tyranny standing up and saying, I'm not going to buckle. I'm going to lead my people to victory. Does that really motivate donors at this moment in history?
I think they do. The first lesson is that actors seem to make good presidents.
Yeah. So maybe there's a history on that.
There's a whole lesson there that might be an opportunity. So the second thing, donors always connect with the leader. In fact, I would say the majority of reasons why donors are giving to groups is, yes, a general sense of the mission, but it's when they connect with somebody, it may be the CEO, it may be somebody else, yeah, who lives the passion. That is the most successful model for both fundraising and putting money into action. And where I think it manifests itself most significantly is not just in the work that Natalia and others are doing, because they're essentially taking a risk. There's a gamble. There's no promise that this is going to succeed. Right. But donors are willing to place that bet, recognizing that the return could be significant. The return could be tragic, but it's not dollars wasted because they believe in the person who him or herself believes in that. And that is why Natalia and others, I think, are so successful in this, is because they live it, they believe it. It's what they're doing, and donors like to see that.
Yeah, no, there's no doubt about it. They do. They love to see resilience in action. Natalia, there's a lot of storied history between the United States and Ukraine. There's all of the stereotypes as well. It's always been labeled a corrupt country, but although its people are just remarkably gracious. I've had such a blessing to meet so many of them over the years. What is something you want at this moment when American donors can make a big difference in this effort to back Ukraine and its fight for freedom? What's something you want the American public to know about your country, men and women, that they may not know, that the American media has failed to convey?
So I think the most important thing to understand is that what we're doing now is walking the talk. So we are fighting for the values that we believe in. We are fighting for our freedom. We are fighting for our home and for our future and the future of our children. So it's not the Ukrainian government sending Ukrainian people to die. It's hundreds of thousands of Ukrainians. And if we're talking about Ukrainians as a whole, as part of the whole movement to defend Ukraine against the attack, it's millions of Ukrainians who are making conscious decision to resist. And I think that's the important part, right? Because if you don't do anything to defend your values, then those are just pretty words, then don't mean anything. And so we are doing our part. We are fighting. We are resisting, but we can't do it alone. And I'm talking about support when it comes to humanitarian aid. And I'm talking about military aid, of course, because we can't defend ourselves and we can't win the war if we don't have the means for it. So to us, delivering the message that this is not a Ukraine issue, right? This is not something that just happening so far away that it's not relevant to other countries. This is not true. And it's not just because of the values that we are trying to protect that we do share with Americans, but it's also the matter of food, world food security, as we see right now. So this is a much larger scale issue that we are all dealing with. And one of the fears that we currently have is because the war is turning into a rather lengthy thing. This latest invasion is that people will lose interest and people will stop caring. And as soon as that happens, then we will be left all alone. And one of the things why we tell these stories, we share our experiences, and we talk to foreign media is to make sure that we are not forgotten, and that what's happening in Ukraine is being explained to people on the outside, you know, so that we share this experience. And like, join in the fight. Like, everything you do to help to influence the situation, you are becoming a stakeholder of this freedom fight that's happening in the middle of Europe in the 21st century.
Yeah, oh, this is our World War II moment in many ways. I had this amazing interaction with a good friend of mine in Ukraine. He lives in the suburbs of Kiev, and try to stay in touch with him every few days just to make sure he's still okay. His parents' place had been hit by one of the rockets early on, though they were not badly injured, thankfully. But he said to me, you know, I used to, when I come to America, I always loved the movie The Patriot with Mel Gibson. It is the story of the Swamp Fox Militia in South Carolina, famous movie Mel Gibson. And he said to me, he said, I'm going to put this in real terms to you, John. This is our The Patriot moment. This is Ukraine's moment to stand up to tyranny. And we have to win, whether we're a ragtag, smaller than Russia. Do most Americans, do most Ukrainians feel that way right now, Natalia, that this is their the revolution to finally put Russia in its place?
Yes, in some way it is. Basically, to most of us, we see it as our last stand of sorts,
right?
Because we do understand that if we don't win now, it means that there will be another Belarus in Europe, because we will lose Ukraine, not just as a country that we are citizens of. We will lose Ukraine that we've been dreaming of, that we've been working on building in the future. And this is unacceptable. And at the same time, we understand that when we win this now, it won't be, you know, the final boss, if we're talking about the video game situation, because we know that Russia will be back again.
Yep.
It will not just leave us alone. But our position is the following. We need to win this war now, and we need to get our affairs in order. We need to resolve our issues that we've been dealing with since 1991 to make sure that, like I said, when they come back again, we will be in a much better position, or if we're doing so well that they will be discouraged from ever attacking us again.
Yep, this has to be that deterrence moment. Winning this war would create a pretty significant deterrence for Russia never to do it again. Such an amazing opportunity. Real quickly, Lawson, how can people engage Donors Trust, particularly if they're motivated to want to help the great people of Ukraine at this moment of crisis? What's the best way to get involved with Donors Trust?
Sure, I think the easiest is to go to our website, which is just donorstrust.org. Our contact information is there. The simplest is just to use that information, get the phone number, give us a call. Any of my staff will be happy to help. We also can correlate into things like the Atlas Ukrainian Freedom Fund that we are participating in. So just give us a call, depending on what your interest is. And the warning is, if you're going to Poland anytime soon, we may also ask you to bring a suitcase full of things. So it may be that kind of relationship too. But just go to the website, give us a call. We can fill in the details. We can also get the information again from you as to what are you really trying to do, what are you trying to accomplish, and get you to the right institution that's a trusted one to make sure that, that whatever that resource is getting to be someone on the ground. And we're just ignoring the whole government-to-government thing because we can be more efficient about it.
Yeah, that it is. You get the governments out of the way. The point-to-point is definitely the best way to get philanthropy on the ground. There's also a great page. I bookmarked it back in March or April. But there's a page on Donors Trust, folks, if you haven't had a chance, the ways to help Ukraine. It's just really well written. It lays out the entire network that Natalia and others are part of, and that Lawson and his team have been supporting freedom fighters and freedom lovers in Ukraine. Natalia, last word, what's something you know the Ukrainian people need right now that if someone's thinking of donating, they could make a difference right now? What's something really important right now for the Ukrainian people?
Well, other than weapons to weapons and more weapons, I would say that if and when you're donating to all of these opportunities that Lawson mentioned, it will go to the most urgent needs. For instance, something that we're dealing in Ukraine right now is sourcing anti-viper serum because we don't have it in the country at all, and we do have viper snakes living in our forests and mountains. So what I'm trying to bring up is that by working through the organizations that Lawson mentioned, people who donate funds there, they will know for sure that the money will go to the most urgent needs, no matter how small or big, and that it will all go to cover those needs, and they can be sure that it's money well spent, and it's not just money well spent, but it's an investment in a really good cause, if I may. So needs change basically every minute of every day. We do have different lists coming in, and it's both life-saving opportunities to help with patient care in hospitals, both adult and children's hospitals, and the needs of frontline. So whatever it is, we are working with the help of donors to make sure that you know, people get what they need and that they get it as soon as possible. And it's one of the reasons why we can be very efficient when we are avoiding this government-to-government link that Lawson was talking about, because we avoid all of the bureaucracy, all of the negotiating, and we just get things done very quickly.
Yep, there's no doubt about it. Big government creates big delays. We see it all the time. Lawson Bader from Donors Trust, Natalia Milnick from the Ben Dukidzi Free Market Center. We are so lucky you brought us inside this world today. Folks, if you want to make a difference, Donors Trust can get that money started. Align your values with your money, with your impact. You can actually make an impact. Make sure it reaches all those great people that Natalia was just talking about. Natalia, Lawson, thanks for joining me today. It was a great honor to have you on.
Privileged to be here.
Thank you for having me.
Give everybody in Ukraine a big warm welcome from all of us at Just the News, too. We're fighting right alongside you in spirit, for sure, Natalia.
Thank you. Will do. And hopefully next time I will be able to provide an update on how we won the war.
I'm going to take you up on that.
In the country to make it much better than it was before.
We're looking forward to Ukraine's VD Victory Day. We can't wait for that to happen. All right, folks, we're going to take a quick commercial break. When we come back, we're going to take a little bit of a tour through the Capitol. We're going to find out a few of the things that the January 6th committee, well, they're not talking about. We've got a great interview coming up right after the commercial break.
Getting the smile and confidence you've been dreaming about, all from the comfort of your home, isn't a total mystery with Bite Clear Aligners. Just don't be surprised if all your friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Bite Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Angie's List is now Angie, and we've heard a lot of theories about why.
I thought it was an eco move. Fewer words, less paper.
No, it was so you could say it faster.
No, it's to be more iconic.
Must be a tech thing.
But those aren't quite right. It's because now you can compare upfront prices, book a service instantly, and even get your project handled from start to finish.
Sounds easy.
It is, and it makes us so much more than just a list. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I. Or download the app today.
Welcome back, America. So glad to have this next guest. He always gives us facts and truth, no spin. I always enjoy having the conversation. I know Amanda does, too. Joining us now from the great state of Georgia, Congressman Austin Scott. Congressman, great to have you back on the show.
Hey, John, Amanda, good to see you. Thanks for having me.
We are honored to have you on. I know you want to talk about your colleague from the great state of Georgia, what's happened to him, what the Capitol, the January 6th police have done, even after the Capitol police gave a pretty irrefutable letter saying Congressman Loudermilk didn't do anything wrong. He just gave a normal constituent tour. Today they put out the video and they're all hyperventilating again. He's not in the Capitol. He doesn't do anything wrong. How do they get away with this?
John, let me just read for your viewers what the Capitol Police said. And let me remind you, this is the same police that the committee has brought before them repeatedly to testify and say we should be respecting the things that these police officers are saying. And they do a wonderful job of protecting us here at the Capitol. I want to give them all the credit they deserve for that. And I want to read to you word for word what their statement is. There is no evidence that Representative Loudermilk entered the U.S. Capitol with this group on January the 5th, 2021. We train our officers on being alert for people conducting surveillance or reconnaissance, and we do not consider any of the activities we observed as suspicious. There's a little more to the letter. That's the conclusion. But they go bit by bit into the things that the committee says they deem to be suspicious. And the Capitol Hill Police refute them indisputably. And then the committee turned around and came back after Barry again today with another post. Now let's think about what Barry Loudermilk did. They accused him. Barry said, "I didn't do it. In fact, I want the police to investigate it." The police investigate it. The police say he didn't do it. And then the committee comes back and accuses him again, even after the police, you know, said he didn't do it. And so I think that committee, which is clearly a partisan witch hunt, is sitting there hiding behind an exemption to liability for the conduct of members of Congress. And I will tell you, Barry Loudermilk's a good man. He's a middle class man. I think it'd be very interesting if he had the money to bring suit against the staff members that have posted this against him and the members of the committee that have engaged in this witch hunt against him, especially since the Capitol Police have already said there's nothing to this, and then to turn around and watch what the clowns on the committee posted today. So, again, they've proven they're nothing but a partisan witch hunt. None of them deserve to be members of Congress anymore. And I hope Representative Loudermilk is able to actually put them into a court and be awarded damages for what they are doing to him and his family's reputation. And he, by the way, John, is getting threats to him and his family, of course, threats of violence against a Republican. That's actually what Democrats encourage, isn't it?
We've seen it.
And Congressman, you know, I don't know if it's obfuscation. I don't really know what their ultimate aim is with this committee. Well, I do know what their ultimate aim is with this committee hearing, but it feels a little bit like a miscalculation because you only had 20 million viewers last week, and I think that's even debatable. This week, they've canceled the broadcast. I think that there's going to be even more support galvanized behind Congressman Loudermilk and a lot of these people that have been targeted by the January 6th committee. Do you think that that's going to drive voters who are more down the middle to look at these Republicans and say, you know, they were targeted by these crazy Democrats. Maybe I should go the other way this time.
Oh, I think the January 6th committee is absolutely backfiring on the people that put it in. And I think that the people in the general public that were actually supportive of the committee are now getting to see what the committee is all about. I mean, when you schedule a primetime hearing and you have teleprompters and you have skits and everything else, and then you turn around and you make a very pointed accusation against a member of Congress, and like they did with Barry Loudermilk, Barry Loudermilk says, "Hey, didn't do it, but I know you're not going to take my word for it, so I want the police to investigate it." The very police force that you've had testifying before your committee, which I have a tremendous amount of respect for, comes back and says, "Didn't do anything wrong. There's nothing even suspicious here." And then they turn around and go after him again the next day. I think people see that this is a witch hunt, and it is an extremely partisan witch hunt. And I hope those members that are engaging in this pay a price at the polls this coming November.
Yeah, there has to be a consequence for putting on this big of a charade. There really does. And I did my college dissertation on Joe McCarthy. This is worse than some of the stuff he did. There's no doubt about it. It's just crazy.
Absolutely.
Congressman, you have been such an eloquent voice on something Americans really care about, gas prices, food prices. Joe Biden wants to go to Saudi Arabia and beg for more oil from the OPEC cartel while we have bundles of it here in America. Does he have this calculation wrong?
He's absolutely got it wrong. OPEC is a cartel. The members of OPEC are not our friends. There are people in this world, countries in this world that share our interests and they share our values. The OPEC cartel does neither of those. We do engage in, if you will, transactional relationships with those countries simply because there is a need that we each have with each other. But what he has done is to make us more dependent on people who don't share our interests or our values by things like shutting down the Keystone Pipeline. He's where we could have gotten the oil from Canada transported through a pipeline to our refineries inside the United States. He's now complaining that the United States doesn't have enough refineries when I candidly, seriously doubt that he would issue a permit to build a refinery when he actually withdrew the permit to build the pipeline. I mean, the guy, The guy can't get out of his own way. And what we need is him to get out of America's way. And unfortunately, he keeps doubling down on his mistakes instead of backing up. If he wants to be a great president, he should just take us back to where we were before he got elected.
Congressman, quick question. We've got about 45 seconds left. You're from the great state of Georgia, a big ag state. And I know we ask you about this every time you come on, but I wanted to get an update on the gas and supply chain crisis with respect to the ag industry.
Well, yeah, I mean, you know, our big farmers buy diesel 9,000 gallons at the time. So, you know, you can take, you know, what you're doing at every time you pull in at the gas pump, and you can multiply that exponentially, right? And so a tank of diesel that a couple of years ago cost $25,000 or $20,000, you know, is now $45,000. If you look at nitrogen, and I don't have the numbers right here in front of me, a fertilizer, the input costs have gone up exponentially with regard to agriculture. That's having a tremendous impact on the cost of groceries at the store. But more than that, our farmers have ever had and still end up upside down because of the input costs. And there will be no...
It's unbelievable, Congressman, with that. We're going to have to leave it there just because we're about to hit a break. Thank you for joining us, sir.
Folks, we'll be right back after this commercial break.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
What makes a life a good one? Is it the adventure you have? Or the friends you find along the way? Maybe it's pursuing your passion while striving to protect, defend, and save what you believe in every single day. So what makes a life a good one? In the Coast Guard, we think it's all of the above and more. But you'll have to find out for yourself. Visit GoCoastGuard.com to learn more.
All right, folks, that wraps up another edition of John Solomon Reports, the podcast from Just the News. Before you go, you know, it's summer. It's getting muggy and humid, and the storms come rolling through. You're probably spending a lot of time on your back deck like Judy, Josh, and I are, and the dogs are. And, you know, what better way to spend a Saturday night than having a nice, cool, well-preserved, good-tasting glass of wine? Now, to do that, you not only have to get the great wine, you got to store it right. You got to make sure it doesn't spoil. It isn't stored properly, or you're going to ruin that long-craved evening in the summer. Maybe while you're overlooking your yard, sipping a glass of wine, having fellowship with your family, your spouse, your kids, your friends, your neighbors. So, you know, a lot of people don't know this, but summer heat and sunlight can spoil the wine. I left a bottle of wine out on the counter for a long time, right near a window. And when we opened it up, it's like, oh, it's more like vinegar than wine. What happened? My bad. Well, we're going to help you fix this. We've got a great new partnership with Wine Enthusiasts. They have the best solutions to store your wine. They have great designs. And they have the largest selection of wine coolers for every drinker. Whether you just have 6 bottles of wine or 600 bottles of wine, you get a huge collection. I know a few people that are wine connoisseurs and could fill a room or two with them. Well, the Wine Enthusiast has the solution for everybody from 6 to 600 bottles. And they also have consultants get on the phone. You tell them what you want, they're going to craft a solution for you. And you know what? We're just a few days from Father's Day, but it's not too late to get Dad a gift, an accessory, a glassware, furniture, wine storage, even some cigar gifts. If your dad likes to smoke a cigar or drop of whiskey in the glass, they've got that too at the Father's Day gift shop at Wine Enthusiast. So go check that out today. Let me tell you why. If you let them know I sent you, you're going to get special offers, special discounts, and it's not too late to get something for Dad. Now, how are you going to tell him I sent you? Here's what you can do. You're going to go to wineenthusiast.com. You got that? Wineenthusiast.com, and go check out their thing, or you can text the word John, J-O-H-N, my first name, of course, to 511-511. That's all you got to do. Text the word John to 511-511. You know what's going to happen? They're going to text you back a way to get special offers, special discounts, special gifts, because you remember the Justin Hughes family, the John Solomon Reports family. What better way to do this? Now, if you do this, you're going to be supporting our journalism and our news, because the Wine Enthusiast is a great strategic partner of us here at Justin Hughes and John Solomon Reports. You're going to get great gifts, and you're going to make sure you don't have that situation that Judy and I had the day I left the bottle of wine in the sunlight for several days and tried to pop it open, and oh, it was a bad taste. I got some trouble. I got in trouble at home. I was in the doghouse ruining a great bottle of wine. Don't let that happen. I got another great wine story I'm going to tell you. It involves Nelson Mandela. Tomorrow I'll tell you that. It'll remind you one more time to go check out Wine Enthusiasts before the weekend. All right, folks, that wraps up another edition of John Solomon Reports, a podcast from Just the News. Check us out day and night. Hey, tonight on the television show, Just the News, Not Noise, on Real America's Voice, Congresswoman Mary Miller, Dr. Harvey Risch from Yale, one of the great voices on COVID, honest voices on COVID, and Trent Talbot, the CEO of Brave Books. They're a great book publisher for children, the type of books you won't be ashamed to share your children or worried that they're going to be given critical race theory or transgenderism. Trent Talbot, in fact, he's the guy publishing our good friend Kash Patel's book, The Plot to Kill the King, which is a great book of helping your young children understand what happened to Donald Trump in the Russia collusion case. What a great lineup on the TV show. Check it out. Amanda Head and I can have a lot of fun tonight. Until then, let me tell you what. You have a great night. God bless you. God bless this incredible country of the United States. As he always says, remember, there are a group of people in Ukraine fighting to have the same type of freedom we achieved against tyranny during the 1770s and 1780s. Yes, our Revolutionary War team. Right now, there's a similar war going on in Ukraine. Natalia Lawson told us how you could help. Just keep that in mind as you go to bed tonight. All right. God bless. Good night. We'll talk to you tomorrow. At Just the News, we break the stories others in the media ignore or are too afraid to tell. We did it on Russia collusion, Hunter Biden, and the security and intelligence failures that preceded January 6th. Our stories have real impact and reach because we stick to the facts. I'm John Solomon. You can help me expand our honest, unvarnished, and unbiased reporting by becoming a premium member at Just the News. You'll get an ad-free experience and exclusive member-only access to events, and you'll be helping us dig up more truth. Join today at justthenews.com/subscribe.